Welcome back to the Escape Collective Tour Daily, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz, sitting around a faux wood table with my two favorite colleagues.
Don't say that.
My fourth and fifth favorite colleagues.
Yeah, there we go.
Ian Trelor.
Hello.
And Johnny Long.
Hello.
We've just wrapped up stage 10. We are on a square in Clermont-Ferrand. Ian, why don't you set the scene for me?
It's a big square. There's brasseries all around it, which is French for a place that will serve you meat and chips. Behind Johnny, we have an enormous, menacing cathedral. We've spoken about it before, but I'm speaking about it again because it keeps giving me a fright every time I see it.
I'm coming around to it.
I'm not.
I like it.
We found something out about it, didn't we? Which I don't think we mentioned on the podcast.
No,
we did. That's the thing.
So, did we?
I don't know, because our conversations on mic and off mic blur into one.
The cathedral, in case we haven't talked about it, was made out of volcanic rock. And that makes me like it more, because I thought it was just dirty.
You did.
It still looks quite menacing to me. Yeah, it looms.
Like last night, we were leaving, and they don't light it up at all at night. And you look over, and it's just... It's like darker than the shadow, you know? It's like it
just disappears into the night
sky.
Soaking
up all of the light that
it's
is happening
antimatter,
over there.
Religious antimatter.
It looks like religious antimatter, and it was actually kind of freaky. It was like this big sort of dark shadow looming over us. Didn't like it.
Yeah.
If Jesus lives in there, it's bad Jesus. Bad to the bone Jesus. Leather jacket Jesus.
We had a great stage today.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really great.
It was a deeply, deeply enjoyable stage of just bike racing. We watched them when we were driving. You were driving, Kaylee, but me and Ian on my phone were watching the start of the stage, like when there was like a proper fight for the breakaway. We haven't watched every start of the stage, but from what we could gather, this was one of the first proper big fights for the breakaway. So it was back and forth, groups going off. It was great.
I liked the fact that Jonas Vingegaard wasn't even sure how the breakaway had formed, and he was in it for a while.
Yeah. He's like, I don't remember. Just suddenly I was in the breakaway, which runs true with what we saw from the Netflix series, where it's just sort of a constant state of panic and chaos.
Well, and it also proves how strong those guys are, because I guarantee you...
Yeah, they just ride away.
If you had asked a lot of other riders in the Peloton whether they knew they were in the breakaway or not, they'd be like, I definitely knew that I either was or wasn't, because I was trying extremely hard to do so. And Jonas Vingegaard was just kind of like, I was just riding along. All of a sudden, I was in a breakaway.
It's unfathomable how small he is, yet he manages to just like ride like a ruler at times.
It is amazing. He's tiny. He's much smaller than Pogacar.
If you ever are at a bike race, you should go, and Vingegaard is there, you should go to the Jumbo-Visma bus and look at Vingegaard's bike, because it is so tiny. It is a child's bike. If you see that bike, and then if there's like Wout van Aert's bike, it is just...
It's like twice the size.
Father and son.
Yeah, very much so. Speaking of which, the photo that popped up on Instagram over the weekend of Filippo Ganna and...
Oh, Ben Tullett.
Ben Tullett.
Jeez.
If you haven't found this, was it on Ganna's? Whose feed was that?
Good question. We'll find it and post it in the Discord. I might have seen it on the Discord, actually.
Maybe, yeah.
But it's, I mean, that is the biggest...
It looks like a new dad riding with their recently off training wheels child. Yeah. Sorry, Ben Tullett. You look extremely small next to Filippo Ganna. Was there Photoshop involved in that? It seems almost excessive.
You can't trust anything anymore, Kaylee. So
that's true.
Maybe, yeah.
It was, probably wasn't even a picture taken. It's all just the AI.
Oh, God. Well, Peo Bilbao won the stage. And I will freely admit that he's like, what, he's 30?
33.
He is 33 years old. He's been at this a long time, but he's tended to ride for teams that I frankly didn't interact with a whole lot, and I just haven't interacted with him a whole lot. He's also a rider who, I don't know, I think this is not really true anymore, but when I first started this job, the Spaniards and Italians in particular, they tended to not really speak much English, and so I kind of just didn't really bother, and I was working with Andrew Hood at the time, who lives in Spain and speaks Spanish, so like... All the Spanish guys, I just kind of didn't talk to for like 8 years of my career. I think that was actually, one, incorrect. I think most of them these days actually do speak quite good English.
Traditionally, there's a lot of like Spanish and Italian journalists who cover the sports. If anything interesting is said, then it will get translated by those guys back to you.
Yep.
And yeah, and it's just a bit, those countries are just a bit further from sort of like the Northern European.
Well, so here's a bit of inside baseball that no one probably cares about. Back in the day, there was like a sort of international quote exchange, right? Where the Italians would get the Italians and the Spanish would get the Spanish and the French would get the French. Mm. And then we kind of like swim around the press room and you would get what you needed. If you needed some Spanish, you'd go over to the guys at Marca and be like, hey, what did Contador say? You'd get your quote. They speak good enough English, they could translate, or you just get the quote in Spanish and translate it yourself. That doesn't really happen anymore.
We should bring it back.
In these days, and I thought this was interesting, that Peo Bilbao did his press conference entirely in English. He took questions in Spanish.
Yeah.
And so all the Spanish guys were asking questions in Spanish, but he returned it in, frankly, excellent, eloquent, and thoughtful English. And I guess that's the point that I was kind of slowly getting around to, is this is a guy who I have not avoided, but just not bothered to really talk to for 13 years, 10 years. And I should have been talking to him the whole time. He's a really quite interesting and thoughtful guy. Ian, you're writing a story about him right now.
I am. I'm in the midst of writing a story about him. One of the nice things about Peo Bilbao, I'm sure that I'll slip up and pronounce it Peo Bilbao again. And
Dane will
be furious because he speaks very good Spanish and I don't speak any. Peo Bilbao. One of the things that's nice about this, and I guess the whole thing about this win, is that it's wrapped up in good vibes and also very sad vibes, because it comes in the wake of Gino Maeda dying at the Tour of Switzerland, Tour de Suisse. Peo Bilbao was on that team, and after Gino Maeda's death, Gino Maeda was quite an environmentalist and had a number of different causes that he donated to, and Peo Bilbao has taken up those causes. So he is donating a euro for each rider he finishes in front of at this tour. Which is everybody. And he also, before this stage, said that if he wins, he'll donate double.
Mm.
So far he's up to 1,550-ish. I did
that
have
sounds
the
about
maps.
Right.
It was like 1,200 yesterday.
So that makes sense.
So
yep.
1,550 maybe. I did do the maths on a calculator, and then I put the wrong number into my article that I'm looking at now. So
that's
one of those days. It's the heat.
It's been very hot. Anyway, it was quite an emotional win for a number of different reasons, and I think that even though everybody that was in that breakaway would have wanted to beat him to the line, I don't think anyone's really begrudging him winning either. Just because, you know, the entire peloton was quite shaken by Maeda's death, and the level of articulation that Bilbao used when he was speaking about it afterwards was quite impressive.
Especially when you asked him with the last question about risk and if it had changed his mind and how he viewed risk as part of his job, which I thought was quite a humanizing way of putting it. And then his answer was very long to that, but also very informative, how he was talking about when he went back out, when he had to go back on the bike to train after the Tour de Suisse and before the Tour de France, how like when he was descending, he like the first couple of days he just couldn't do any speed, and like the first couple of days stages he couldn't race, and it was all in the front of his mind. And it's, you know.
He also spoke about the preparation that he'd made for the stage into San Sebastian, stage two,
which is his home roads, we should say. He's Basque.
Yeah, he's Basque.
Peo Bilbao, and he's from Bilbao, which is amazing. I wish that's how our names work.
He's Johnny London. From Guernica, just down the road.
Kaylee Vermont.
Technically born in California.
Kaylee, California.
What?
And yeah. Kaylee, California.
Only for like 2 years.
That explains all the shuckers.
Are you in Melbourne? No.
Yes, you're Melbourne. Melbourne. I'm from Melbourne.
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 Ian Melbourne.
Sorry,
Ian
Melbourne. I detracted your serious point.
That's what I was trying to say before I was rudely cut off. He was saying that on the stage into San Sebastian, he'd planned an attack on the descent. And in training, he'd been very mindful of the fact that his friend had died on a descent like 3 weeks earlier. So he'd prepared for it, and he'd practiced several times, and it was very, very front of mind in his preparations for the Tour de France that was something. He also spoke about how after Gino Maeder's death, he'd gone home, and one of the things that had helped him feel better again, or normal again, if you can feel normal again after something like that, was spending time with his daughter. And in his response to my question, he was talking about how he referenced that he had that to live for, and that he was very aware of the risks of his sport, but decided that it's not something that you can really control everything, and either you have to just accept that as part of life, or you give up, basically. So that was the kind of journey he went on in the lead up to this race, which is so close as well after this is the first race he's done since Gino Maeder's death.
I think it's one of those moments where the sort of the context around a relatively innocuous event crystallized. So I don't know if our listeners will remember, but Bilbao attacked down into San Sebastian on stage two of this race. What he was talking about in the press conference, what Ian was referencing there, is he reconned that a number of times, and he essentially decided during the recon that he was going to attack downhill, and then had to kind of wrestle with the demons of having just lost a friend and colleague descending a climb, right? Or descending a flying down a descent. And it kind of puts that, I don't know, it puts that attack in context for me. Like it that attack that we watched on stage two, it didn't end up working. It didn't even last that long. But for him, now that we kind of know that, now that this is something that he had worked through, that he had done the descent a number of times and felt that at first he was unable to descend fast enough, and then had kind of worked through the whole process and got to a point where he knew that this is the, he's like, if I'm going to win this bicycle race, this is the place I'm going to attack. This is the chance, and I'm going to push all the difficult things to the back of my head and just do this. I think that was a really poignant bit of context around something that just happens in a bike race all the time, and it makes you wonder how many other things are like that in this bike race. Like, how many other weird little attacks, how many other decisions are made that, you know, you see the stuff on TV and you don't really know what or why. And that was a good example of just sort of the depth of the sport, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I think that sometimes, or quite often, the cyclists themselves aren't particularly articulate, and it's easy to just think of them as these dumb jocks that are just like riding their bikes and just like grunting in response to your questions. But
some of them are.
Yeah. Very true.
But some are very thoughtful.
Yep.
Yeah, and
Bilbao turns out is.
Yeah, obviously one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was really special. And I also think that in this particular Tour de France, there's all of these extra layers of symbolism related to Maeder, in the fact that Gino Maeder had a dog. There was a street dog that he adopted from the streets of Bilbao, and he named that dog Peo, after his friend Peo Bilbao. So there's a Grand Depart in Bilbao as well. It's two Bilbaos, there's two Peos. It's just a really, really lovely several layers of symbolism.
Well, and then even the aside from that, you have the fact that this was the first Spanish stage win since 2018, and it's been exactly, this is the 100th stage since the last Spanish win. So there's all of these sort of circles just being nicely knitted together.
Yeah.
And it's all, things work in mysterious ways. Not to get all Joe Rogan-y, but...
The bit about his children was the other one that stuck out to me in that press conference, which we should, I think Jonas Vingegaard has done so many press conferences now. So we get the yellow jersey and the stage winner every day in the press conferences. And Vingegaard just kind of answers a bunch of questions, trying to get out of there as fast as possible. And you could tell that Bilbao was very much like, kind of like reveling in the
Yeah, well, it's your chance, isn't it? Like, he doesn't get many interviews like that, and it's a chance to have your say on lots
of different things. And the other thing that stuck out to me was his comment about like the way that. The question was, did you get any like professional help, like psychological help after Tour de Suisse? And his answer was, I think it was offered, but the best thing for him was to go back with his children, like you said, Ian. And that was what he said about his children, I think any parent out there will probably relate to, which is that small children don't have any idea, like, about the world, you know? So spending time with them kind of separates you from the world as well. And I thought that was a particularly kind of poignant point that he made, again, in a second language. That was super impressive. And sounds like that's how he sort of ended up where we are today, where he just won a Tour de France stage. And not just won a Tour de France stage, won a incredibly difficult and incredibly complicated Tour de France stage. To end up being the first rider across the line today was a really impressive feat. Not least because, as Johnny was saying, sort of the first 2 hours, hour and a half, was pretty chaotic. And then, if we get to the finale, we've got, what, five riders coming into the finish.
The weirdest finale in a while.
Just south of Clermont-Ferrand, and a whole bunch of climbers trying to sprint each other, which is always hilarious. Ben O'Connor went really early.
Yeah.
We were talking about in the car earlier that I think he went too early.
You think he could have saved something and then...
I think if he had had the balls to wait, which is a hard thing to do. And I know why he attacked. He attacked because he has a terrible sprint. Like, that's what you do when you don't trust your sprint. And the reason why Bilbao waited is because he does trust his sprint. But still, he looked really strong. Like, he was able to accelerate and then accelerate again, which most of the other riders were not able to do.
Yeah.
And so that tells me that if he had waited and if he had countered something, we might be talking about a Ben O'Connor victory.
And then you had, Ben O'Connor hit out into that final kilometer or so. And then you had Georg Zimmermann, the Intermarché rider, who opened up an impossibly large gap. Like, that, the TV helicopter, like, sort of was, like, trying to dance between the two groups, but it was, like, taking too long to get up the road. And that looks like he could have probably waited as well.
Yeah.
But that's
although
a game
I think he blew up. That, like, big gap, blow up, got caught. Yeah, I think he was pretty fried. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great finish. And then, because then they had to, before that chase group that contained Peo Bilbao had to catch the Latvian rider,
Chris Nielands. Yeah.
Who was, he was interviewed on French TV afterwards and was just, like, gutted. He just couldn't, like, he was saying he had the best legs he'd ever had today. And if he was ever going to win a tour stage, today was the day. And he just ran out about a couple kilometers out.
It was like a K and a half. Maybe more than that. But yeah, close to the finish.
And it would have been, Israel Premier Tech doubling up because they won the Puy de Dôme, then rest day, and then back in with another stage win.
Yep. Bummer. It's been a while since Latvian won a Tour de France stage. And I happen to know that some of the crew internally are Latvia fans.
I think they're partial to Latvia, yeah.
So there was some internal cheering for Chris Nielands. It's actually not a particularly hard Latvian name to say, as Latvian names go. So we end up with Peo Bilbao winning the stage, Georg Zimmermann coming in second, the Intermarché rider, Ben O'Connor in third. Still a great ride from Ben O'Connor. He also pulled back, almost 3 minutes on GC, which is, he's pretty much done.
He said
GC,
he's leaving GC and just wants a stage win.
I think that's probably
today
the
best decision. Today he should have just waited and just done the ballsy thing where it's like, I've already won a stage of the Tour. You guys haven't. I'm prepared to throw this away. But then we were saying that, like, that's the sort of often the Spanish rider tactic, and maybe that's why they haven't won a Tour stage in 5 years. It's because they're just like, you know what? I'll go down with the ship. No problem.
Bilbao now in fifth overall.
Yep, zoomed up there.
Big
moves up the GC. Let's keep in mind that, like, so when O'Connor finished in fourth, he did that off the back of a pretty solid breakaway. I think there's gonna be a lot of riders in that sort of ninth to 20th kind of range that are looking to do that in the next week and a half because basically Jumbo-Visma and UAE are not that keen on defending that tightly, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not worried about Peo Bilbao taking yellow. So the only teams that are then going to defend are like Ineos, which we saw a bit of today.
Yeah, Bora.
Bora a bit today. If they don't throw everything into it, stand a pretty good chance of pulling a Peo Bilbao in the next week and a half.
I mean, that would keep Ineos happy because they're used to doing that, sort of like tapping the breakaway and keeping them like at arm's length, and they can pretend they're leading the Tour by acting like a Tour winning team of controlling the break without having the race lead. So they can sort of like trick their mind into being like, oh yeah, we're at the tour, we're doing our normal thing, except it's fighting for third, fourth, fifth.
That was a brutal take. They're currently in
sixth and seventh, or
fourth and eighth.
Okay.
Yep. Carlos Rodriguez in fourth and Tom Pidcock in eighth, which is
Right. He's getting better throughout the race as well.
He's getting better.
Yeah, it'd be great if Pogacar and Vingegaard take even more time, and then they can really just let the brakes go and have these guys sort of scrapping it out for for like the third place.
You know who I don't think will be scrapping it out for third place?
Who?
David Gaudu. David Gaudu won't be
He had an interesting day.
No, but he ended up catching back on.
He did.
Yeah. He did,
would you say that
good.
The vibes were good?
Post rest day, bad vibes.
I didn't understand what he was saying in his post race interview, but the expression on his face was of a man who was like, if I just smile and pretend that nothing's wrong, then maybe nothing is wrong.
That's also how he looks when he's doing sponsored content posts for a thermometer, which he put on his Instagram yesterday, which I've seen some enterprising memers take that picture, clip his hand out of it, and then there's just like superimposed his head onto unicorns. Because he does look like a unicorn.
If you want another meme analogy, Arnaud Démare, the French sprinter for Groupama FDJ, who was left at home in sacrifice to Gaudu's overall ambitions at the Tour. Démare's at home, and he's the Arthur the Aardvark shaking fist meme. Just so angry that he's been left at home while it's like Stefan Kung pacing Gaudu back to the peloton.
It's not a good look for them this year. We should take a brief moment to, one, thank all of our members that came to our little live show yesterday. Members, if you're out there, you haven't listened to our special rest day episode, go check it out. It should be in your email, or it's on Discord. It's also worth mentioning, I think, that right now you can sign up to be an Escape Collective subscriber for $1 for this whole month. Take advantage. Pay the dollar, drop the paywall, read all the good stuff that we have this month, and I think you'll love it, and you will stick around.
It's like the podcast, but written down.
It is like the and succinct.
Yeah, even more editing than our wonderful Dane Cash does.
Not always succinct.
Not always. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Generally. Sometimes. Anyway, that's how we fund this entire enterprise. You may have noticed that there's at the moment, there's no ads anywhere.
Which is nice.
Which is great. It's nice for you. It's nice for us. And that is because all of our revenue as of today, all of it, every single cent, comes from our members and subscribers. And we love you very much. It also means if enough of you don't sign up, then we can't keep doing this. So if you love our tour content, then please do sign up. Head over to escapecollective.com/join. You can see that $1 offer. Of course, you can also sign up, you know, annual rate, whatever you want to do. But now is the time to get in. This $1 offer is not going to last forever. In fact, it's going to be gone relatively
Nothing
soon.
Lasts forever, Caleb.
Nothing lasts forever.
It's Life gonna be is gone transient. Soon.
Not even Group Go Do. Oh, even though it seems like it.
All right. Let's get back to podcast. So,
I've got a question for you, Caleb.
Yep.
Is Wout van Aert going home tomorrow?
Well, according to Jonas Vingegaard, no. Never going anywhere.
A man who's not inclined to smile seems to think the idea of Wout van Aert going home is like one of the funniest jokes he's ever heard. And I want to know what's funny about it, because Wout van Aert's wife is having a baby. The likelihood is he will be going home before the tour.
And Jonas is a known
family man.
But maybe just his family, not someone else's.
Oh, that would be a good plot twist if Jonas loves his family, but just does not care for anyone else's.
You are here for me.
His child has a playmate over, and it's just like I simply do not care for this child's well-being at all. But yeah, maybe is he in denial?
Could be. I mean, losing Wout would be a big deal. It would be a big deal. Like,
yeah, because even an undercooked Wout is still, you know.
Well, if you look at the way that they've run their tactics, right? And there was a fair amount of chat about tactics in the
Ian Boswell was just asking Kaylee whether he wants to go for a ride tomorrow through hand gestures from the other side of the
Was that
square.
What was happening?
Yeah.
Ah.
I speak fluent Boswell.
Sorry, I got distracted there. So I should mention that the Cycling Podcast, our good friends at the Cycling Podcast, Ian Boswell, Mitch Shocker, and Lionel Burney, were recording a podcast like 50 feet from us.
We were going to sit on the table right next to them and just podcast louder, but we thought that wouldn't be good for either enterprise.
And sometimes I just walk over and take a mic from them. I have done that before as well. But
people do it to us on occasion, and they are...
And we don't like them for it, which is why I don't do it so much anymore. Yeah. What was I just talking about?
Wout van Aert, baby. Oh. Wife guy Jonas.
Wout van Aert is important to the team. That's
yeah.
You know.
They do the
I was saying lots of words to basically say that.
They do the cycling equivalent of Route 1 football, where it's like just put the big guy up top and chuck it up to him, except the chuck it, instead of being a football, is Jonas Vingegaard.
That is a fantastic analogy, and it's very true. I do think that, like, there's been sort of a fair amount of, I don't know, plaudits aimed at Jumbo-Visma for their tactical brilliance, but it's not particularly...
When
you have a Wout van Aert...
Yeah, when you have the best riders, it's easy to pull off amazing tactics. Yeah.
Like, if you stick the best rider, most diverse rider in the world in a breakaway, and then use him later, that's effective. Like, I don't... Great. It's not actually that brilliant, I guess, is my point. It works.
Yeah.
It's just not, like, nuanced, tactical...
It's not the 4D chess of the peloton, is it?
No, it's like 2D chess. It's on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It still works, though. But if he does leave, that is a big deal for the last week.
The 4D chess attack to the peloton was last year with Primoz Roglic and Vingegaard on the Col de Granon, on the Galibier, where they're 1-2-ing him, and Pogacar has that sort of psychological thing where Roglic is the older Slovenian rider. There's kind of like a little rivalry there, even if they're like friendly on the surface. Like there's all these undercurrents going on, and we've been talking to ask Jonas about this, ask UAE and Jumbo about this, and everyone admits that he's a great rider and it is a miss this year. And I think my big feeling is that will be the difference maker, as well as Wout van Aert, but not having that Primoz Roglic there to get you 3 minutes by 1-2-ing.
Yeah.
Because Jumbo were trying to suggest as well to me this morning that they've got Sepp Kuss, who could also play a role in the third week, but he's already like 6 minutes, 45 seconds down. So it's not quite the same.
No. No, it's not even remotely.
But yeah, the nice thing is that because there's 17 seconds difference on GC, you can talk about GC every day and it's still interesting.
Yeah.
Come to the next mountain.
17 seconds at stage 10.
It's nuts.
It's nuts. It's nuts. And like, if you go down a bit further... Like, let's say both these two were not in the bike race.
Yeah, we were talking about this, yeah.
It's still a great bike race. Then you've got Jai Hindley, Rodriguez, Bilbao, Yates, other Yates, Pidcock, all within, like, a minute of each other.
Imagine a tour where it was Jai Hindley defending from, like, Ineos with, like, Simon Yates and Adam Yates also, like, forming some weird... It'd be like the Ashes, but on bikes.
Or, like, the Giro.
Yeah, all that.
With a better route, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's enough sort of chat about today's bike race. Do we have a Christoph Corner?
Of course we got a Christoph Corner.
Of course we have a Christoph Corner.
We always have a Christoph Corner. But this one, I think, is the gold medal Christoph Corner. I published an article yesterday, which I think might be my favorite headline that I've ever written.
Which is saying a lot.
Did a squirrel fall on Alexander Christoph's head at the 2013 Tour of Oman? Which I think is a question that...
We don't do question mark headlines that often, but that felt like a good opportunity
to do so. It's an obvious one. I think as soon as I was asked that question by a colleague in the press room, I immediately needed to know the answer. So I cornered Christoph.
Wow.
And cornered Christoph for Christoph's Corner. And I asked him, just straight up, did this happen? And it's a complicated... response. Because when you're dealing with an Alexander Christoph, a man who is not prone to whimsy, I felt...
Understatement of the century.
Oh, I felt like I needed to prepare, so I went and researched. Was he at the race? Yes. Does Oman have squirrels? Sort of. Tricky, tricky response, that one, because there are invasive squirrels from the UAE, but they're not common. And the journal article that I could find was 7 years after the fact. So this was not conclusive enough for me. So in the end, I just had to ask him. I just had to line up Christoph and say, cast your mind back to 2013, which I later found out was actually 2015. And he told me, no, a squirrel did not fall on his head.
Oh, yeah.
But a rat did.
That's gross.
Goes from being a charming story to a horrifying one.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah. I said a squirrel would be cuter than a rat, and he agreed.
Nice to know that he can find things cute.
Yeah, although I think that there's a little bit of Alexander Kristoff's showmanship, because the way that he revealed that it was a rat, there were like dramatic pauses.
Really?
And the way that he pronounced a rat seemed like it should have capitals. And he knew it was funny. I knew it was funny. We were having a lovely time. Then he told me that he grabbed it and threw it. And then I asked how far he threw it. And he said, not that far, just a little bit, which was really good. And
well, he doesn't want to be an animal abuser.
No,
yeah.
No. That's the worst thing you could be.
Not for this Stavanger stallion. You don't want animal and animal crime.
No, exactly.
Especially not in Oman.
I wondered whether it was a dead rat because it was a hot day.
Obviously, I think it could have just expired and fallen out of the tree.
On Alexander Kristoff's head, but no. No, he said it was alive. Of course it was alive. And it wasn't even so hot at the start. It was just some wind brought it down from the tree.
Okay.
So there is your Stavanger Stallion for the day, your Kristoff Corner.
So we started off thinking that this story was from 2013, and it turned out to not be from 2013. We also started off thinking this story was about a squirrel. Turned out to not be about a squirrel. If this isn't capital J journalism, I don't know what is.
What more do you people want?
What more do you people
want? This is the Ian Trelaw internet journalism equivalent of, like, if you want to know if it's raining outside, look out the window. J school would never teach you just how far you have to go these days. How bad is the audio? How good is the audio from the Kristoff interview? Because I feel like if it was performative, maybe it could be thrown in.
It was a bit
performative
because I was quite excited during the interview, so I was like interjecting. And I was like, wait, was it alive? I was like, of course it was alive. It's quite good.
Should we chuck
it
in?
We could
do we have it?
Chuck it in.
All right. We'll trim it down a little bit and chuck it in. Let's listen.
Good. Do you remember an animal falling on your head?
Like, yeah, it was there. A rat.
A rat?
Yes.
And it is a little story that has been that I've heard a couple of times from people this year, and I find it very funny. What is your reaction when a rat falls on your head at the Tour of Oman?
I don't remember. I was just poof.
Oh, so it just
it landed on and I was crawling down. I'm like, yeah. What the fuck is
okay,
a rat?
I had heard squirrel, so a squirrel is a bit cuter than a rat. Cool. That's...
Yeah, no, but I was a bit surprised, but I was not... the doctor was more scared if I got,
rabies.
Rabies or something, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, I had heard that you tried to catch it. Like you tried to grab it or something?
Yeah, I grabbed it off my
and
back.
And then threw it?
Yeah.
You threw the rat...
Down on the ground, yes.
Oh, just down on the ground.
Yeah, not far. No, not so far. But
oh, that's a little bit disappointing. I was expecting like.
I didn't know what it was, so I thought it was some nuts or something. And then
was it alive? Was it?
Of course,
was it
alive.
Dropping because of the heat, or it hadn't just.
It
like,
was not so heat on the start. If I remember right, there was a lot of wind, so we were sitting under a tree, and the tree was blowing. And
okay. Oh, so wind.
I think the wind brought it down.
Okay. Have any other animals fallen on you over the course of your long professional career?
And now that was the only time.
Well, before we get over to Jose Bain, we do need our regular segment. We do need an update on the Mayo Sabla. Sable? Sab.
Is it Sable or Sable?
There's no accent over the E.
Dealer's choice?
There's Sable. No accent over the E.
Whose go is it first now? Do either of you two remember?
I think I went first yesterday and failed because it was Arkea guy.
Oh, on Puy de Dome, yes.
Yep. So I think Ian is first.
Ian is first. Okay. We have a new Mayo Sabla. 46th overall. Climbed four places today. Ooh. with a time of 1 hour, 1 minute, 35. The placings are tumbling. The gaps to the hour are increasing. We're getting into this bike race. Would you like nationality, team, fun fact, or serious fact?
Fun fact.
God damn.
Oh, is this too obvious?
No, I need to I need to try and remember.
Is it
fun
not a
fact.
Fun rider?
He is fun, but in a peculiar way.
Should I just do nationality? Rather than you have to improvise.
I should have checked earlier and then I could have remembered. I think there are definitely fun facts about him.
But you don't know
but
what
I
they
don't
are.
Know them. I would say he's a fun guy. A nationality, Belgian.
Oh. It's not Steph Crass.
That's your guess. You only
he's
get a guess.
He's out of the bike race.
No, I know. He's out of the bike race. So I said it's not Steph Crass.
Oh, okay.
Who's Belgian but good enough to be an hour out? I'm struggling.
I think we need like a countdown.
Yeah.
Pass.
Pass. You don't want to guess.
Can't
think of any Belgian man. Just one Belgian man.
How about the one with the Red Bull helmet?
Yeah, okay. Well, better.
Incorrect, but a Belgian man.
Okay, so we have a Belgian an hour back.
Oh, you can have team fun fact, serious fact.
Do you have a serious fact ready?
Yes, but it might give it away.
Oh, well, sounds great to me.
Okay.
No, okay, we'll go team.
Lotto Zni.
Belgian on Lotto Destiny. Zni.
Come on.
Kempenaerts.
Correct.
Ah!
Kempenaerts.
I have a fun fact for you.
Okay.
Fun fact. How do you not know this about Victor Kempenaerts? Victor Kempenaerts asked a woman out wrote it on his chest in a time trial at the Giro.
When did this happen?
Like 2018 or something.
Oh, well, I was not in the cycling world.
Small youth.
Rode across, pulled his jersey out so that he just had this message for the woman across his
chest.
And
it said, will you go out with me? Something. Anyway, that's a fun fact about Victor Kempenaerts. And now I am winning 3-2.
You are.
Go.
You know what? It should be 3-2-1, and if you guys don't get it, I get a point.
Oh. Yeah, but then you give us shit clues.
No, my integrity is above a lovely trip to the Paris Olympics.
All right, so Victor Kempenaerts is our current Miles Sabla. Congrats to Victor. Who's nearby?
Well, you can't know that because they might come up in the following days.
Okay. Can't look.
Can't catch me out that easy. Any other business? It was very hot today. On the temperature at the finish line was 43 degrees.
Yeah.
The fire truck came past.
That's like 102 for
Fahrenheit. Oh, yeah. I forgot we have to do the conversion for the silly numbers. a fire truck sprayed the fans.
For the superior temperature numbers.
We're not getting it. We do this discussion every few days, and it's crazy. Yeah, fire truck was spraying fans at the finish line with water. Fire truck, fire engine.
I would
dare I forget my roots.
I would have loved to have been sprayed by a fire truck in our press room where it was hot.
Some of the riders were even wearing their ice vests up to the start line, and then I guess some poor soigneur was having to trek up to the start line, which was miles away from the buses, to then collect the ice vest to bring them back to the bus.
Speaking of start line, I know several people were interested in how our experience of Volcania was, the volcano-themed adventure park.
No rides.
Little adventure to be found.
Yeah, we didn't go in. We were too busy doing our job.
There was like one big grey like sort of funnel thing, which maybe was like an industrial volcano impression. I don't know.
I was really excited, and then
I was hoping for any Americans, particularly East Coast Americans, I was hoping for sort of like a Hershey Park. So Hershey, Pennsylvania has Hershey Park, where Hershey chocolate is from.
Oh, like Cadbury World in the UK.
Yeah, and there's like big wooden roller coasters, and it's great.
Oh, it's not like that. That's
what I was hoping
where they make Cadbury chocolate.
That's what I was hoping. No, not a factory tour. Like a whole like amusement park.
Oh, okay.
For Hershey chocolate, and that's what I was hoping for with volcanoes, and that's not what it was.
It seemed more like a day out for the Volcania staff members who just got to stand next to like ASO stewards and hand out flyers for Volcania.
Very exciting. I would imagine that they paid for that privilege.
Money poorly spent.
Well, we were somewhat disappointed in Volcania.
I don't know what we expected, to be honest.
I expected something, but I was just standing around in buses, like in the buses area, trying to speak to people, often without any luck. Everyone was tense, and everyone was hot, and everyone was hiding in their buses and didn't want to talk to the likes of me.
We've moved. Are those the Norwegians again? Have we moved with the Norwegians?
Yeah, they were eating at our restaurant yesterday, and they're eating at our restaurant today. So we are being followed by TV2.
Just like how Geraint Thomas wants what Tade and Jonas are having for breakfast, we clearly want what Tor Hushovd is having for dinner.
I like this square. It's a good square.
I think this was a square that gave me bad vibes when I was here in 2020, but maybe it's had a redo, or maybe...
It's not the square you see, it's the people you see it with.
Oh, that's gross.
All right, we should get over to Josebein. Today we take a look at the impressive cathedral, of Clermont-Ferrand, and go back to the wild times of the 1904 Tour de France.
Do we need to go back and add a spoiler alert when we were talking about the cathedral before?
I think Jose might have a different take to us.
She probably has slightly more detail.
Won't refer to it as menacing.
Sit back. This is a wild story.
We start the stage in Clermont-Ferrand, where in less than 2 weeks, the Tour de France Femme starts as well. I can't wait for the showdown between Van Vleuten and Vollering, but first let's focus on Vingegaard and Pogacar and a cathedral that cannot be missed. The great black Romanesque Gothic cathedral, Notre-Dame de l'Assomption, towers over the city. The 13th century cathedral is an iconic site, and this is not at least because of the special type of rocks that are used for its construction, because this is a volcanic cathedral. The complete walls and spires of the cathedral are constructed from blocks of black solidified lava called Pierre de Volvic. Due to its hardness and texture, containing numerous small, irregularly shaped bubbles or vacuoles, this basaltic rock is both strong and lightweight and easy to sculpture. The master builders, starting all the way back in 1248, were lucky to have this excellent building material in their vicinity because it allowed them to design such a huge cathedral with slender and high towers and a lot of detail. Well, at 98 kilometers from the line, we pass the town of Commentry. In the small hamlet of La Selle, which is part of Commentry, a famous Tour de France rider was born in 1876. Hippolyte Aucouturier, or Hercule the Terrible, won two stages in the 1903 Tour de France. In 1904, he won his second Paris-Roubaix and was ready to get more stage wins or even the overall in the Tour de France of that year. Back then, it was run with a point system instead of time. Well, he did win four stages out of the six, but here is where things get really wild. That year, riders were attacked and firearms were used. Yes, these were truly wild times. Halfway through the race, Maurice Garin, the winner of the first Tour de France the year before, said, "If I'm not murdered before we reach Paris, I'll win the Tour de France again." And a French rider had reason to be worried. Before the first stage ended in Lyon, he was attacked by four masked men in a car who tried to knock him and nearest rival Lucien Potier off their bikes before fleeing the scene. Between Lyon and Saint-Étienne, while local rider André Faure was attacking on a climb, some 200 fans invaded the road to prevent the rest of the peloton from chasing him. "Kill them," they shouted while race officials fired shots into the air to disperse the angry crowd. In the fight that followed, Garin injured his hand and Paul Gerby was beaten up and left unconscious on the road. Well, tension continued when the Tour reached Nîmes in the southwest of France. A local rider named Payan had been disqualified a few days before, but insisted on starting all the same. when tour officials refused, more angry fans threw stones at the riders, demanding that Payan be reinstated. Between Bordeaux and Achamps, nails were scattered on the road, causing punctures. Henri Cornet even rode the last 40 kilometres of the final stage with two flat tyres. Yet, the riders made it to Paris. Hippolyte Aucouturier won four stages and a fourth place in the GC. And Maurice Garin won his second Tour de France. That seemed to be the end of the race, but then some power play between Tour de France boss Desgranges and the French Cycling Union ensued. Well, that sounds familiar. In December of 1904, the French Cycling Union found the first four of the general classification guilty of various rule infractions like taking trains or receiving assistance from cars. The top four, including Aucouturier, were disqualified and some riders were even banned. The fifth place rider, 19-year-old Henri Cornet, got himself an unexpected victory, and he is still the youngest winner to date. A dejected Tour de France boss, Henri Desgranges, was ready to call it quits after two editions, but he finally decided to carry on with the tour, saying, "We must continue the great moral crusade to clean up cycling, and it is something only the Tour de France can achieve."
Thanks to Jose for the much more detailed explanation cathedral and, the 1904 tour. I actually read a book about that tour recently. It was very good. Very good book. Great Tour de France. I'm trying to remember what the book is called. Cannot remember. I will remember it and mention it tomorrow if I remember.
Okay, Kaylee, we've all got stuff going on.
Yeah, congrats on the reading, Kaylee. Post much.
Tomorrow starts in Clermont-Ferrand, which is where we are.
Love that.
Right now.
Love
we can,
that for us.
We can walk to the start, and that makes us happy inside. Finishes in Moulins, which is way far away. And then the next day's start is down here again. So we have decisions to
Hooray.
Make.
I imagine we will be recording this podcast back in this square tomorrow.
I would imagine so. We have a couple climbs tomorrow. We got a Cat 4, a Cat 4, and a Cat 4, and then a bunch of lumps into the finish. It's actually kind of a difficult stage. It is not a guaranteed sprinter stage. In fact, I would say this is a breakaway stage.
Oh, you reckon?
Probably going to look much like today. That's my guess. Because
I better change my fantasy pick then.
I
can finally use
Jasper Philipps. They're only Cat 4s. It's the thing. Like the, but one of the Cat 4s says it's 2.9 kilometers long, and then the climb continues for another 3 kilometers at the same gradient. So I don't know how the heck they decided that was the top.
Well,
but
and Jakobsen and Ewan aren't feeling great.
No,
by all accounts. So that's two less sprint teams that may be inclined to chase all day.
I would say if you were looking for fantasy picks, I would look more in the Mess Peterson end of the spectrum.
Thank
of
you.
Sprinters.
I'll use that.
Binyam Girmay.
Oh, I love a Girmay stage for him.
Yep. It's lumpy. It's a lumpy lump stage. Yeah. It'll be good. I hope it's just like crazy breakaway chaos again. And
that'd be fun.
The question, I think, will be more... Basically, the question comes down to, do these sprinters teams, and in particular, do Quickstep and Trek, and maybe a bit of Bora, want to hold the whole thing together? That's the question. It's what they want to do, not what the breakaway wants to do. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, probably from this exact same square, beneath the big, haunting, menacing cathedral. Maybe we'll try a different brasserie. There's like six here.
Yeah, we got the time.
We got lots of time. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Au revoir.